barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is Friday, GGIF, Menace Army, September 16th, week three of college football. We are going to talk about it. And it is also Super Chat Friday, Mailbag Friday, and Follow Friday. So right down in the bio, there is a Linktree link to all of our social media accounts. I need you to go down right now, click that, and follow us everywhere. Let's grow this army. This is about recruitment, and it is on you as a member of the platoon, of the militia. It's on you to recruit more army soldiers, and the Menace Army is growing and alive and well. And Chris, I would be remiss to not start this show to discuss the douchebags at the Cover 3 podcast, because Chris sends me this shit because he knows it's going to piss me off. I still don't know who these fuckers are. What is it? Bud Elliott and somebody else, Chris?
Yeah, it's Bud Elliott and some guys.
Fucking clowns. And everything we do, boy, they need to jump off my dick is what they need to do. If they really want to get a fresh look at it, they can go on Google. I think the pictures are out there. But they need to jump off it because we start blowing up TikTok. No one else is on TikTok. What do? They start making shitty TikToks.
That like we have format. The same format as me.
Right, the same format that Chris makes them. They are trying to copy Chris's style for the videos that we post on TikTok. And then, because of you guys, because of the support, the massive following that we are building, the Menace Army, we have always coined you. He sent me some graphic, and now they have the Cover 3 Army. It's just the dumbest, lamest shit I've ever seen. So this is a bright and loud fuck you, Cover 3 podcast. You're a bunch of fucking copycat clowns who don't know what you're talking about. Like your take on Joe Burrow when I called you out on it and you blocked me. Go fuck yourself, San Diego. Had to start with that, Chris, because that shit is just so annoying. And I had a little bit of coffee today, man. I'm feeling good. How you feeling, Chris?
Good, man. I'm on my second cup of coffee, and that shit is crazy, dude. Like, you know, that's like my bitter rival. Like, I just wake up and just like am mad when I see shit like that. But we're here, and it's Friday, which means football is today and tomorrow. There's a big high school football game today. Shama Damadonna is playing American Heritage. Got a chance to talk to Mario Perez yesterday. He feels real good. And we just dropped that episode as well.
Yeah, if you didn't check it out, so the offensive coordinator at American Heritage High School's name is Mario Perez. He's been there forever since the school started. Mm-hmm. And he's all the great players that have come from American Heritage, he was there with them. From Torrance Gibson, I mean, all the way through.
Yeah, Sony Michelle, who played yesterday. Yeah,
Sony Michelle. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have one of the highest total of active NFL players of any high school in the country. He was on a bonus Chris's corner this morning, talking about the recruits, talking about being an American Heritage, and talking about the game tonight. And we dropped that this morning, so make sure you go check that out. But yeah, just it's exciting times. There's also Florida State Louisville tonight, and I'm rocking with my Seminoles. I've told you 100 times that I have a number of good friends at Florida State, and they're on the rise. I'm taking Florida State to win. We'll get to that later, though, because we will have the Menace Mensa coming on at 12:30 to give you his props for the weekend and talk a little bit about sports gambling.
And all they're breaking up. They're breaking up those cold ass uniforms for today's game too.
Just icy, all white, everything. I mean, they are cocaina, they say. So it's going to be exciting. Got a good weekend of college, decent weekend of college football. Miami, Texas A&M, Ohio State takes on Toledo. We're going to break that down. And as always on Friday, throw in your super chat so we can get to your question. Chris has a nice mailbag list from our Patreon subscribers. If you want your question answered every week, the link is right underneath Chris on the screen. It's down in the bio, patreon.com/menace2sports. And if you really want to learn football, join that Colonel tier. I'm telling you, it is inside access into a coach's film room. We break down games. I got Ohio State done. Alabama's going to be done today. The Alabama-Texas game. It's just really good content, Chris. Not to pump my own tires, but it's been fun, and the feedback has been outstanding. But anyways, Chris, that's enough of that bullshit. Let's get to the show.
Let's get to the show. All right, and also throw us a like, too. Thank you for throwing that in the chat. We're going to hit Super Chats here in a little bit, but Zach, a couple things that I wanted to float your way before we get really into it. I want to have a discussion about this, Big Money Sark. Remember that string of recruiting wins they had right around when Arch Manning committed?
Yeah, every day we went live, someone committed there for like 5 or 7 days or something. It was just absurd.
A new 5-star every day. And now details, because Texas is a public school, have come out about the amount of money that they spent on these visits. So there was a big visiting weekend, and Arch was there. That's the Arch Manning weekend. Zach, they ran up a $280,000 tab. How good a recruiting could you have been if you could run up tabs like this?
We need to get a detailed breakdown of what they spent it on, because I just don't even know what all they could have spent it on. It had to be like decor and games and like renting things to do, because you can't spend that kind of money on the kid, right? There is set limitations from the NCAA on how much money you can spend on each meal, how much, you know, what you can spend money on when it comes to what the kid is actually getting from you. Otherwise, people would fly in like, you know, Wagyu beef, and like they would do just unreal shit if they had an unlimited budget. But they don't limit you on what you can spend on things like bounce houses and paying girls to work the weekend. I mean, we did it. One of my favorite things I ever did, because Ohio State had this rule where the only people who could give tours of campus were these ambassadors that Ohio State has a program. They're Ohio State ambassadors, the same people that would give general college students tours. And I mean, not to disrespect them, but they weren't exactly what we were looking for, right? And so they were adamant about it. They couldn't do it. And so I said, all right, but they can't tell me I can't have friends come to the weekend and hang out, right? They can't tell me that. This is not an official Ohio State person. So I had a good friend that worked at Roosters. Roosters brought in a slew of 10 to 12 Roosters girls, and they were around every weekend that I had a big-time recruit coming in. So I was like, basically like, nah, fuck you, Ohio State. I went down to Clemson. When I was down at Clemson, Chris, I walked into Jeff Scott's office as we were just talking some receiver play, just hanging out. He was a friend of mine. I walk in, and there was an absolute smoke show sitting at his desk. She was probably 20, 21 years old, blonde. I mean, just Southern badass woman. And I'm like, he walks out and I'm like, the fuck was that? And he was like, bro, every coach has a recruiting girl here. And every recruiting girl has either been Miss South Carolina, Miss South Carolina teen, like every single one was a beauty pageant winner. And I'm like, I go back, I look at our ambassadors and I'm like, they got beauty queens. And this is what I got. Like, I'm shooting Nerf bullets. They're shooting nuclear weapons. So I had to get a fix. So I went, I called someone I knew and I got that shit done. But so I don't know what, anyways, long story short, I don't know what they're spending money on. It's just like, damn, $280K on a weekend.
Car rentals, flying celebrities out. Like, I don't know what it is. I mean, so the two weekends in June, they spent a total of $630,000. And that's where they landed Arch Manning, the tackles, the receivers, everybody kind of landed in that string. Sark is spending some really big bands. And it's like, damn, I wish Ohio State would have spent that kind of money for our, you know, the official locker boys visit. We got stuffed in the locker for every single player. But again, this is just the right direction. What, Chris?
We should do that. We should file a Freedom of Information Act and find out how much Ohio State spent on that massive failure weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do because that. I mean, that's the name of the game in recruiting is spending money, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's on your recruiting staff, on your creativity budget, where you're putting out hype videos and things like that. Like, you have to spend a ton of money to win in recruiting. And now with NIL, you got to spend it that way too, right? And it's all encompassing. And that's why recruiting is big money business. That's what it is. And it's just shows you that Texas is committed to spending the money to try to level this program up under Steve Sarkisian. That's what it tells you.
No, it's a huge level up. And if you look around kind of at the new coaches, one of the things that really caught my attention was the other super large visit bump was Billy Napier added $700,000 to his visit budget for the next year. That was one of the things he went and did. And that is an indication of success. If you can recruit at a high level, that automatically pencils you in for 8 to 9 wins a year. And then it's, can you coach and can you develop? Sark and Billy are doing things the right way. And I love to see it because it's good for the sport.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's like, I saw someone talking about Jim Harbaugh and how, you know, he hasn't, people are saying he hasn't been a failure. Like outside of last year, like it's been a solid team every year. And it was I can't remember his name now. It's from the general chat, Chris, from our VIP group chat, the Detroit radio guy. He went on a rant about, don't give me bullshit. He said, this roster, just being Michigan and recruiting the way Michigan recruits, you have 9 wins already there. And so if you only have 9 or 10 wins every year, you're not a successful coach. Mm-hmm. You just are doing the status quo at Michigan, right? It's like Ohio State right now. They are a 10-win team just waking up out of bed.
Exactly.
So I need to see 11, 12, 13 wins to show me that this coaching staff is doing a great job. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's where Florida's trying to get. That's where some of these schools that talent pool has fallen a bit. They're trying to just get that standard baseline. Give me 8 wins and let me fight for 10, 11, 12.
Exactly. And that's exactly it. And it's interesting because the other part of it is like Billy Napier has upped the recruiting budget for Florida, $700,000 in money he raised and kind of was able to kind of allocate for that. That is more than the entire recruiting budget for half the schools in the Big Ten, Zach. Like schools like Wisconsin, schools like Iowa North, like just refuse to recruit. They refuse. It's like, holy, for the betterment of Big Ten football, we need everybody across the board to be spending at least $500,000 a year on recruiting alone. The money's there.
To level up, right? Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to see the shit like we just saw. Washington State beats Wisconsin. Brian Ferentz can't even score a touchdown, right? That's the shit you're going to see just solely because of talent.
Mm-hmm. Since those two recruiting weekends that Texas had, they added 12 top 300 players in those classes.
Crazy.
It works. It works.
It works.
And again, they're going to keep adding them because they look like they're in the right direction. All right, Zach, week 3. Can it be as crazy as week 2? Obviously, we didn't see week 2 coming because we looked at the vacuum of games. It's like, okay, there's some decent games. There's no way that Marshall beats Notre Dame. There's no way that App State beats A&M. Both of those games were in about the 15 to 25 spread. Zach, any upsets you think this week? Anything you're going to be watching? What do you?
I mean, I said yesterday, I just got a gut feeling Nebraska beats Oklahoma. There's no reason behind that. I mean, there's literally nothing on film or analytically that says that. Like last year, I'm pretty decent at calling upsets. I called the Alabama loss last year. I called the Clemson loss last year in the same weekend, and I put it out as a parlay that paid like +500. And so I don't think this weekend's not a good weekend of college football. It's really not. There's not a lot of good games. There certainly could be upsets. If a team like Notre Dame shits down their leg against Marshall and loses, I mean, there certainly can be. But on paper, I don't see one analytically or based on what I've studied that there's going to be an upset. I mean, I think Miami beats Texas A&M. That's not really an upset. I think this Toledo team coming to Columbus is going to be a solid team. I don't think they have even a chance at sniffing an upset. But, Chris, did you know the last time Ohio State played Toledo was in 2011, Luke Fickell's interim head coaching year, and they were driving down the field. They got to like the 16-yard line with, how much was it, 53 seconds left to play. They were losing 27-22 in the low red zone, about to score to win the game and upset Ohio State when John Simon sacked the quarterback on fourth down to end the game. The last time they came to the horseshoe, it was a fucking almost upset.
I don't like that you're starting off with that. I wanted to kind of talk about
how you look at this Toledo team, Chris. They're 2-0. They beat Long Island. I don't know who that is, but they beat them 37-0.
Only
they
Long beat Island them. I know is Long Island Iced Tea. So
of course it is, Chris. They're such a degenerate. But then they beat UMass, who's an awful team, but still it's a Division I football team, kind of. They beat them 55-10. And they have a quarterback that came back. He threw for 18 touchdowns last year, 2 interceptions. Daquan Finn is his name. I watched the UMass game this morning, and I mean, he could throw it. He's a good athlete. He ran for over 500 yards last year and 9 touchdowns. The only issue with these upsets, right, is it's so transfer portal dependent, right? Correct. Because not only can Toledo level up by catching a kid that falls like Dallas Gant, right? Dallas Gant transferred from Ohio State to Toledo. And he's a starter on Toledo's defense. They can catch a kid from a big-time program. The other problem here is Their top two wideouts last year both hit the portal. They had really good years, and they're like, all right, I'm better than Toledo. Fuck this. I'm out of here. And they jumped in the portal and went elsewhere. So a place like Toledo has to utilize the portal hard, because if they recruit, if they find a diamond in the rough, that kid's going to have success for 1 year and deuces. He's throwing up the peace sign. He's out of there.
No, you're right. I mean, obviously we're gonna break it down a little bit more, but in terms of upsets, I hope that game is not an upset alert. I could, my little heart can't take that. The school I do have on upset alert, Zach, is USC. They play Fresno State. It's another one of those games I can't really explain it. I think Fresno State's decent. It's like a 13-point spread, and this just feels like a game that Lincoln Riley would lose. I mean, we saw Lincoln Riley in some close ones. He did a miracle to beat Kansas last year. Some random times, it just feels like teams built like Fresno State get it done against Lincoln Riley teams.
See, I'm actually buying the USC hype right now. I really am. And I think
me too, but this is the one I think they drop.
You can't buy their hype and then predict a fucking upset to Fresno. What are you talking about?
On alert. Like, I wouldn't call it, but I do like USC moving forward. This is the game that I do worry if I'm USC.
Yeah. Well, I'm not worried about that game. I really am. I'm buying the USC hype. I think Jordan Addison has, you know, against poor competition, unless you want to call Stanford a great secondary. Jordan Addison has been a pleasant surprise to me. Caleb Williams has played extremely well. And the biggest surprise is the personnel they have on defense and Alex Grinch, the job he's done in a short 9 months. I'm buying the USC hype right now. I really am.
I do think that Jordan Addison has really benefited from having two really good offensive minds. And now at USC, they have more weapons. So he's able to kind of maneuver in more space, a lot of the tunnel screens. So I do. USC is good. This is just, for some reason, just like how you couldn't explain why you think Nebraska is going to beat OU. I don't think they're going to beat them, but I think it's going to be one of those weird close games, because it feels like a weird close game. South Carolina plays Georgia. You think they have an inkling of a chance or nah?
No, absolutely not. That is the hype I will never buy, Spencer Rattler. I didn't buy it when he came out of high school, when he was going to be the starter at Oklahoma. I didn't buy it midseason. I didn't buy it when he transferred to South Carolina. It's the same old Spencer Rattler. That shit's never going to change. I'm not buying it at all.
He throws such a pretty ball, Zach. His mechanics look great. The spiral's real tight, and then it just ends up in the other team's hands.
The quarterback position is so much more than the Elite 11, right? How pretty a ball is. It just is. And I've seen it all the way going back to John Brantley at Florida. He was a Gatorade National Player of the Year. Threw one of the prettiest balls I've ever seen. I mean, tight spiral. He could throw it anywhere. He just didn't have the other stuff that you needed, the intangibles, the toughness, the leadership to be a great college quarterback.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it is. I mean,
on top of that, I saw Tim Tebow. When he threw a football, that bitch flapped like a bird. But he had everything. He was the complete package. He just didn't throw a pretty pass.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is kind of what we're getting. In the world of like quarterback development and like quarterback Instagram clips, it's becoming how like Instagram wide receiver trainers. Remember how they would all do the fancy footwork drills, the fancy ladder footwork stuff? They all looked incredible. It's like we've kind of moved away from that because, obviously, Zach, you can kind of attest to it. A lot of that shit doesn't work. Like, it's just a lot of gimmicky stuff. We've moved now to, like, the receiver play. It's like, can you do a little ball flip and then throw the ball into a trash can all the way over there? That's kind of, like, what it is now. It's like, can we do the off-angle throw? Can we have bad footwork and still flick a ball here and there because of the Pat Mahomes, because of that? And it's kind of sensationalized Instagram quarterback training.
Yeah, it really has. It really has. And you watch even the Chiefs game last night. Pat Mahomes makes some incredible throws, some incredible like bad body position, arm, like awkward arm angle throws. And it's impressive, but it can get you in trouble. That's for sure.
Well, what's happening now is like now kids are training for that. It's like the Steph Curry effect. It's like kids practicing bad shots because, oh, who knows, game situation, that might be the issue. Right. But you know who doesn't do that? Tom Brady.
No.
Perfect footwork. Perfect eye discipline, dice people up.
Yeah, and that's what the great ones do, and that's where I think you get a guy with generational talent like Patrick Mahomes has in his arm that does all that funky shit, and all of a sudden you have all these high school kids throwing picks all over the field because they're trying to be Pat Mahomes. It's like, you don't have his talent. You need to be a fundamentally sound quarterback. I used to say it all the time because it happens at receiver a lot too. I mean, you watch NFL. I have an NFL cut-up that I'm going to put on the zone6.com next week. It's the best routes that I saw from the NFL last year. And it's like a 30-minute cut-up. And I'll probably put it on the film review for Patreon also, because it's just talking football. But it's rare to see great routes in the NFL, because a lot of these guys are so talented that they get away with not. But that doesn't mean they wouldn't be better with better fundamentals. And it surely doesn't mean that little Johnny playing for Olentangy Orange High School should be trying to run routes like some fucking sloppy receiver. Like, or else he'll never get open.
Well, it's like the Odell Beckham Jr. thing. Like, that's another example. Like Steph Curry, when he made the catch against the Dallas Cowboys his rookie year, then all of a sudden, whatever do you want to do? Reach back, one hand,
all over the field.
And it's like, you're not Odell Beckham Jr. Put your second fucking hand up and catch the ball.
Yeah, right.
So, all right, Zach, I want to move on a little bit. Ohio State versus Toledo. We have a little preview for them. Let's talk about what they got.
Well, here's the reality. I think that Toledo is going to have the best offensive skill, like wideout group, that Ohio State's going to face until Maryland, right? Certainly through Wisconsin. I think Toledo has better offensive skill on the perimeter than Arkansas State, Notre Dame, and Wisconsin. So this is going to be a little bit of a test for this secondary. I still don't see it being problematic, but we watched Arkansas State's receiver torch Denzel Burke and everyone else that covered him. He was 10 for 10 on targets, right? So I could see this maybe identifying a few weaknesses on Jim Knowles' defense. Or Ohio State answers the bell, right? Steps up to the challenge. So I think that's the one thing to look for, is how does Ohio State secondary handle the best skill they faced through 3 weeks, right? That's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin here is Toledo. I know they've played Long Island and UMass, but this defense is a sound defense. They tackle well. They're aggressive. They're a really good defense. They only have 9 missed tackles through 2 games. That's 4.5 missed tackles per game. I mean, yeah,
that's indicative I to what coach. I didn't
look it up, but that's got to lead the country. If not, it's top 5.
Absolutely.
And I know they haven't played dynamic skill like Ohio State, but I just think this is a game that Ohio State fans should be on high alert. Like, we might learn some shit about this football team. It's also what an opportunity to see, you know, Cam Babb might take the field. Holy shit, how awesome will that be, right? We're going to see Julian Fleming. All reports are he's healthy and going to play. Like, what an opportunity to see zone 6 at full strength. And is the wideout room deep when healthy, right? How good is Julian Fleming? How good can Cam Babb be? How healthy is he? Because right now, the 3-trick pony that they have is not deep enough to withstand deep balls, and the guys are tired. So there's a lot to be seen in this game and a lot we're going to find out. And honestly, as good as this defense has been for Toledo, they're awful on third down. Like, they're not great against passing offenses. So I think CJ Stroud could really come out and have a career day and kind of hopefully build a little momentum as he enters Big Ten play next week.
Well, let's talk about third downs, because you were telling me a little bit about how you evaluate third downs different than anybody else that you've heard talk about.
Here's what I wanted to talk about, because if you look at Toledo on third down, they're 35% on third down. But here's how I look at third down, because what most people don't take into account, and I've never heard on a sports radio show or anything, I've never heard anyone talk about third down like this. There's different scenarios in third down, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you get third and 18. 95% of the time, you're not trying to convert. You might throw a drag, a screen, a runner. You might even hand off a draw, and maybe it pops for 19 and you get the first down. But in reality, you're just trying to get some yards and punt the ball for the battle of field position, right? And then there's times where you're in the plus side of the red zone where it's third and 9 and you're not trying to get 9 yards because your coach told you, yeah, we're in 2-4 down territory. Like, you're going to have a fourth down. And so you might hand the ball off to try to get it to 4th and 2. You might throw a quick slant to gain 5 and get it to 4th and 1. So what I do is I always take 4th down conversions, the successful ones, and add them into 3rd down. Okay. Because that 3rd down call that they then went for it on 4th down, that more than likely was a you have 2 downs to get it call. That was not a call trying to get 3rd and 5. That was a call to try to get it to 4th and 1 at worst case, right? So if you look at that, they're 50% on 3rd and 4th down, 50%, which is actually pretty decent.
That's pretty solid. No, that is solid.
I just think that needs to get out there. Like, when you look at 3rd down, if the team goes for it on 4th down, that 3rd down call was just a need to get it in 2 down call.
Mm-hmm. Like, if you ever see like a 3rd and 8 is kind of the realm you see it, and a team gets like 5 or 6
and plus,
like,
side of the field, right? You'd never do that on the minus 35.
Exactly. Like, 3rd and 8, you use, you use that down. It's like all the weird stuff. Like you use a quarterback draw there. You'll use kind of a bubble.
Yeah, get 5-6 yards.
So like what? Like 4th and 3, 4th and 4. That you add that to your third down conversion rate, and 50% is definitely solid. A couple key things. What are you looking into this game for Ohio State? What do you want to see from the Buckeyes?
Well, I just mentioned it. I want to see how the secondary responds. Yeah. I want to see the growth of this young
D-line. By the secondary, do you just mean Denzel Burke? Is that like name him, coach?
I want to see the safeties continue to play. I want to see Tanner McAllister line up in the slot against a better receiver. I want to see Ronnie Hickman. I want to see Josh Proctor make an impact. I want to see Cam Brown continue to play as well as he's played. I'm talking the whole secondary. And gotcha. Obviously, the keynote is Denzel Burke needs to have a bounce back game, right? He needs to build some confidence and fix some of those errors that he was making against Arkansas State, where he was just getting scorched. I want to see that. I got to see that. I want to see these young D linemen develop. Caden Curry, can he actually make an impact at defensive end as a freshman? Because right now it's trending that way, right? And then I want to see the super sophomore class. I want to see Tylenol Williams break out like Mike Hall Jr. has so far. And I want to see JTT and Jack Sawyer play as well as they are capable of playing, because we haven't really felt their impact like the offseason talk radio told us we would, right? That they were going to be just Joey Bosa and Chase Young on the defensive line at the same time.
Well, I think it's interesting because I do think that they are getting a lot of attention from opposing offensive lines, and that kind of that slide has really opened up things for Mike Hall and Tommy in the middle. But you're right, the production hasn't been there. I don't want to cop any pleas or any moral victories. Zach, do you feel like this defense has to create a turnover now? Like they have to get that monkey off their back.
I said it when we broke down Jim Knowles' defense. I said it preseason. Jim, this defense is not historically been a ball disruptive defense, right? And the only caveat to that was Jim Knowles has better athletes now, so they might become a more turnover creating scheme or culture. But we haven't seen it yet. So is that ever going to be a thing? Like I love everything they've done defensively, but they don't play the ball well. They don't attack the ball in the air well. They don't create turnovers. They're more sound fundamental tackling, and that's all well and good. I'm a fan of what they're doing on the field, but I'm curious, are they going to start disrupting the ball at some point?
Yeah, I mean, you need them to disrupt the ball. At least you would think. I mean, obviously, like the Chase Young years was a lot of strip sacks and a lot of interceptions. Obviously, the Malik Hooker days, I mean, that was kind of a staple. The good old interception, then everybody turning into like a punt return team was kind of absurd to watch. I mean, had me crying for Malik to return punts, but that's neither here nor there. Zach, do you think this is the game we get a turnover? And another question, if Denzel Burke struggles here, do you start thinking he's the mark, or do you start maybe looking at another corner, or does he just have to figure it out by tomorrow?
They look at other corners every day in practice. Like if Denzel Burke's out there, it's because he's the best one.
Yeah. Well, I know Hancock has not been able to shake off that injury, the soft tissue injury.
And that's the issue, right? At full strength, healthy, we'll see if he is the second best corner. But right, if he trots on that field, it's because he's the second best corner, and you can try out anyone you want. You try out players in practice. Like if there's a player better than Denzel Burke on this roster that's healthy and able to play, he is showing it in practice. Mm-hmm. And there is something to performance anxiety and not being able to perform on that stage that is the horseshoe. That could be a thing, and they are going to realize that pretty quick.
It's crazy, Zach. I had a conversation with somebody yesterday. In what world would we think the bright spot of our defense last year would be the place that was kind of a point of, you know, worry a little bit this year? Because
The same time, as good as the D-line's been, the absolute weakness on Ohio State's team last year is their absolute strength on defense now, and that is Tommy Eichenberg and that linebacker group.
Oh, how the turntables have turned.
Flipped on them.
Zach, we got our guy Menace Mensah in here. You want to toss him in?
Let's talk a little sports gambling. Before we get to him, I do want to mention Prize Picks. I went on it, and I've been on it now the last 3 weeks. They've partnered with us. They're a partner of the Menace program. It's where you can take all these fantasy numbers and you can put them together in a parlay and win money. I put this one together today, and I'm going to put money on it. It is Alvin Kamara under 26.5 receiving yards, Tom Brady under 0.5 interceptions, and Devontae Adams over 7.5 receptions. If those three hit, a $20 bet would pay off $100. A $200 bet would pay off $1,000. It is cool as shit. So go to prizepicks.com and check it out. And if you use promo code Menace, you get a free deposit match. Now, that's my play. I'm no handicapper. That's just the play that I like. I'm going to bring in our Mensah, our lead handicapper when it comes to props, to give you some props that you could parlay. on Prize Picks because it's a badass site and I highly encourage it. Welcome to the show, Mensa. What's up, man?
Nothing much. What's up, Zach? How we doing?
I'm ready for another week of college football and NFL. That's absolutely all. What you got for me? Talk to me about some gambles, some bets. What was your record last week?
Oh, last week. Well, on the show, we gave out four picks, three baseball and one college football. They all hit. It was a sweep last week.
So 4-0 would be the
that
record,
would be it.
Right?
That undefeated. Would be it. So let's see.
Undefeated.
Let's keep that hot streak going.
Let's see if we can run that shit up again. Talk to me. What's looking good this
absolutely
week?
Absolutely. So I got two baseball picks I want to throw out for tonight. Actually, one of them's this afternoon. 2:20 start time in Chicago. Marcus Stroman going for the Cubs. I have him over 4.5 hits allowed against the Colorado Rockies. He struggled at home this year. He's got a 1.5 whip in 9 starts, and he's gone over this mark in 6 of those 9. His expected batting average against and his hard hit rate are both among the bottom 18% of the league. And the Rockies are top 10 in the league in expected batting average. They are always in swing mode. They're bottom 10 in the league in walks and top 3 in the league in contact on pitches out of the zone. So that gives you the opportunity to get, singles here and there. So Marcus Stroman over 4.5 hits allowed. And I also like Madison Bumgarner to go under 3.5 strikeouts tonight. Now 3.5 is a low total, but we've played it a bunch this season and we found some success with it. But Bumgarner has a very poor matchup today against San Diego. The Padres strike out at the 9th fewest clip in the league at 21.5%. That number dips to 20.4% against left-handed pitching, and over the last 30 against left-handed pitching, it's even fewer at 18%. Bumgarner has a 16% strikeout rate on the season. His 18.1% whiff rate is the lowest of his career, and his chase rate is only 26.6%. So I think the veteran southpaw is kind of in for a rough showing tonight. I do want to mention there was, when I was going through baseball props this morning, Justin Verlander on paper looks good against Oakland, but he's coming off an injury, so his props aren't available just yet. So, if you're not subscribed already, make sure to subscribe to patreon.com /MenaceToPicks, because we might be throwing some Verlander props out there later, depending on what the lines are and what his expected pitch count is for tonight. So that's it for baseball. I do have a college football prop I want to throw out there for tonight.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for.
Exactly. I know you don't care for baseball.
Hey, but I like winning money, so I'll play your bet. But I'm you're talking about whips and all this other shit. I'm thinking of other things. Anyway.
The college football prop I like for tonight is Florida State's running back Trayshawn Ward over 67.5 rushing yards. Mm-hmm. Louisville comes in, their first two games of the season are kind of underwhelming, especially from a defensive standpoint. They got burned for over 200 yards in each of the first two games against Syracuse and last week against UCF. And Zach, I know we were talking about it earlier that, Florida State should handle them easily tonight. And I think if that game script goes according to plan, Florida State could be running the ball a lot in the second half. And, Ward led the team in carries the first 2 weeks. I think this play should cash with these. I have Ward going over 75 for sure. I know I've seen 67.5 up to 71.5 on some books, but I feel comfortable taking it over any of those numbers.
There you go. College football prop for tonight. Friday night football. We got Florida State, Louisville. And just an update on our process, right? Menace to Picks is our handicapping service. If you're interested, that is a separate Patreon. You also can get it on our show Patreon, Menace to Sports. There's a tier for that. But our college football model is not active yet. Right. We're processing or inputting all the data, and we need a good data set to make sure it's effective. Otherwise, we'll be giving out bad plays.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we won't do that.
Yeah. And so I'm hoping, by the start of next weekend, hopefully we can start throwing out some plays. I think 3 weeks in, we should have a good enough data sample size that we're able to make some plays live for our Patreon subscribers, and also not only player props but game plays, including spreads, totals, and all that stuff. So
absolutely,
yeah.
Well, just be ready because about week 6 of the season, when we have a nice data set, this thing's going to cook because his baseball prop model cooked. Every model we've built cooks at the right time. It's not always great at the beginning, but when it hits midseason to three quarters of the way through, it's cooking. So stay tuned. Make sure to sign up and check that out. As always, Mensa, I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Zach.
Yeah, we'll see you next week. I did want to also throw up on there my my two plays for the weekend that I already gave out, but I wanted to give it out again with my bookie. If you want to bet actual sports, and I'm not talking fantasy, that's where we do prize picks. But if you want to bet actual sports, go to my bookie. They're doing a double deposit match where you get twice as much money free. You put in 200, they give you 400. These are my two plays, USF versus UF under 60 and Akron 47.5, plus 47.5 against the mighty Tennessee Volunteers. But that's enough about gambling. Let's get back to our good friend, Chris Drew.
Good friend, I feel honored. Usually,
and don't forget, super chat your questions because that portion of the show is coming up here quick.
Yeah, so, well, Zach, I'm ready to get into the mailbag from our Menace to Subscribers.
Let's do it.
The Generals, and then let's go get to the Super Chats after that. All right, Zach, for starters, I love the hypothetical what-ifs, man. I love it. So, obviously, the Nebraska job being open and kind of like people hitting you up here and there about this and that, just kind of testing the waters, which means, Zach, I just want to say I'm doing a great job as your PR manager because now people are reaching out. So it's like, what's going on? If you were given the Nebraska head coaching job, who would you recruit to fill out your staff? I'm interested to know who's up next for each position, or Ryan.
So it's a tough question because I need to know a budget. Like, can I get Justin Fry? Can I pay him a $1 million to bring him in as the offensive coordinator? Because he would absolutely be one of my first hires. Mm-hmm. Like, if I could just hire anyone on the offensive side of the ball, I would probably hire Justin, you know, thinking not anyone nationally. Like I would love to hire Larry Johnson, but that shit's not going to fucking happen. Right. So I would absolutely hire Justin to be the O-line coach and coordinator. And if I couldn't get Justin, I would get Alex Atkins from Florida State, who I think is one of the best O-line coaches and offensive minds in the country. Matt Merritt, I would get as my running back coach, who's at Georgia Southern right now. Mm-hmm. I would bring in Keenan Bailey without a doubt. I would bring him in to coach receivers, or quarterbacks. I don't know which. And then, I would bring in Louis Adazio to be the tight end coach slash assistant O-line coach with Justin. He's a bright young coach. Quarterback coach, the other coach would be a tough one. I might go. If I would put Keenan with the quarterbacks and I'd hire Dallas Baker from Baylor as the receiver coach. Okay. That would round out my offensive staff. My defensive staff would be a little tougher. I would definitely bring in Fran Brown, who I believe is at Rutgers, to coach the secondary. I would bring in Sean Cronin, who's at Army, to either do linebackers or D-line, depending on that, who else I could get on that spot.
Marcus Joyner, or is he too high level?
I mean, I absolutely would get Randall Joyner if I could. He's the D-line coach at Ole Miss. I could probably make him a coordinator and pay him a shitload of money to get him to leave Ole Miss. That's not a great move for him going Ole Miss to Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Though, if we build a successful program in the West, we probably have a better chance of making it to the conference title game as opposed to Ole Miss. But, you know, that SEC money hits different. But I would absolutely – he would be one of my first phone calls. Randall Joyner would be.
Randall.
And I would bring Parker Fleming in to run the special teams. And I'd probably, you know, give him some bullshit title and a raise because I think he's probably one of the top two special team coordinators in the country.
Yeah, don't you
if he's not number one.
That's interesting, Zach, because like that gives you like young coaches, first of all, and that gives you recruiting ties to Texas, Florida, Georgia, mm-hmm.
The most – the most important hire is I would hire Kenny Parker as my head strength coach. He's at Ohio State right now. Ohio State needs to understand he was the head strength coach at Rutgers, Rutgers with Chris Ash, and then came back to Ohio State. He is a dynamic strength conditioning coach, and I would definitely hire him.
Our guy Chris O, what is the workload for an NFL position coach compared to a college position coach? Obviously, college coaches have to recruit, which takes up a ton of time, but NFL mm-hmm. coaches have longer seasons and are generally at a higher level job.
Yeah, so the season is just much more of a grind, right? Yeah. Because, you don't have, like, Wednesday and Thursday nights as a college coach, you go home with your families and make recruiting calls. You don't do that as an NFL coach. You stay there and watch film. So you're in the office longer hours in season, and the season is longer, right? It starts way earlier and ends a month later. Well, hopefully, if you make it there. So it is a much longer season. Every guy that coached in the NFL I know, Ryan Day told me to, like, one-on-one in a conversation about my career and just flirting with that idea. The season is a grind like you've never experienced, but the off season is glorious because you don't really have shit to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to evaluate some college prospects, but they're not going to listen to you. You got to give them your rankings at your position for the draft, but they don't really fucking care what you think if you're the receiver coach. They pay a whole personnel department for that. I mean, if you're well-respected, they'll listen to you and value your opinion, but you just don't have much to do. There's no recruiting. So Ryan Day told me it was the best 2 years of his career as far as professional development because all he had to do all day long was study football. Mm-hmm. He could get cut-ups of anything, study what this team did, study what that team did, build his perfect offense, and learn football at such a high level. And so that is what NFL coaches have the luxury of doing. Now, here's the other part. Some of them don't. Some of them are just like, this is vacation season, right? I am chilling, big chilling in the offseason.
Someone that I talked to that worked in the NFL, they said that kind of being around coaches, the coaches said in the NFL is for coaches that love football more than young men, like more than developing young men, and college is for the coaches that love young men more than they love football, which I Absolutely. Thought was a very interesting way to put it. I'm not saying you can't love both. Oh, go ahead.
We have one rule on this show. It's immediate stop point if ever King Bronco comes in the chat. Well, and my man is here. They're playing garage teams and like they was taco trimmings that was respreaded around looking like they was mashed up dead rats with parts 80. How do you say that?
80 seconds
time champs. He followed up with yo with a zero instead of an O. He didn't even hit an O. He hit the zero. Then came back with J.K. McCart's ain't none lamp dust, but at none, but CJ acting like cave goblins ain't got it, but they act like he was. King Bronco, I salute you, sir.
If we ever end up launching a dispensary, we're going to name one of our weeds off of you after you.
We might name it the King Bronco Dispensary.
King Bronco Dispense. I'm here for it. All right, our guy Brian with another question. What does the Buckeye offense need to change slash do from a strategy and play calling standpoint to get back to last year's level?
Well, I mean, they're doing what they did last year. They just don't have the same production out of the receiving core. That's the difference. And I think CJ's played just a little above average. I like the run game already better than I liked it last year. And I think that's going to only continue to enhance and grow. I really think it comes down to these receivers need to execute, get open, like run good routes and make plays. And that's really what it comes down to. And you saw that against Arkansas State, although that was a much lesser opponent than Ohio State's going to have to face. But when they start facing some of these better defenses, the Wisconsins, the Michigan States, the Michigan at the end of the year, I mean, these wideouts are going to have to make fucking plays. They're going to have to hit some deep balls. I mean, that's just what's going to have to happen for this offense to mimic the success they had last year.
What was the biggest struggle or challenge that, Zach, you went through when you first became a coach?
Well, I mean, I walked into a room that was, I mean, pathetic. I mean, it was awfully coached, awfully recruited, awfully developed. I mean, that receiver room was bad. And I wasn't as good a coach as I was in 2018 when I got fired. So the biggest challenge I had was to level myself up, to try to level this room up, you know, with kind of a, not the ball of clay you'd expect at Ohio State. And dealing with Urban Meyer, who was a receiver coach and a fucking needed to beat on someone every day. And that someone ended up being me, having all of that be the situation that it was really hard, really hard.
Last one before we get to the super chats, Zach, what is the next big job Luke gets, or does he ride the wave at Cincy and possibly leave for an NFL job? And what do we have to do to get JB in the chat to introduce him to the number one degenerate, our guy, Cody?
I will text Coach JB today and ask him if he wants to join the chat, but he's got a lot going on, but I'll ask him. I think Luke is going to ride Cincinnati pretty long. I think there's a few jobs that if they came open and had interest, he would consider. And those are Midwest jobs like Penn State, Ohio State. I can't ever fathom a world where he would go to Michigan. Notre Dame would definitely interest him. And that's about it. I mean, I can't mm-hmm. see him going to the SEC. He absolutely is not going to the Pac-12. There's a couple ACC schools that I could see that might fit, but Luke's family is very happy in the state of Ohio. His wife really wants to remain in Ohio. So if they're going to leave the state of Ohio, it better be one, close, and two, just a destination job. And is Penn State that? I don't know. So I don't see him leaving Cincinnati unless one of those perfectly timed up and matched up opportunities presented itself.
Zach, I have a question. I don't know how much you know about this, but I remember when the Notre Dame job came open, they did reach out to Luke and kind of see if he would be interested in interviewing. And he told them after the season, and they took that as disrespect because he wanted to finish coaching with Cincinnati.
Well, and look what they got.
Yeah, I'm saying, did they get strong-armed by Marcus Freeman to kind of like not wait this process out? Because I think that kind of ended their quote-unquote search process because they didn't want to wait and then lose Marcus Freeman.
Basically. I mean, they did their due diligence and then ended up going with the guy they have in-house that they thought had a chance to be a dynamic head coach. And that dynamic head coach might start 0-4 as Notre Dame's head coach as they go play Cal this weekend.
Yikes, don't even want to think about that. I'm rooting for my black brother. Former Buckeye. Yeah. All right, Zach, we got the Super Chats. If you want your Super Chat answered, make sure you drop it in there. We will get to it. I promise. Pinky promise. Easy Eye, thank you for the two. Can Miami win the ACC this year?
They absolutely have a chance. I think this weekend's going to be telling because though Texas A&M lost to App State, that is a very talented football team that has been getting coached fucking really well all week. I mean, really hard. Mm-hmm. So, and I know a couple coaches there that team's going to be ready to play. And I like Miami analytically on film. I think they should win the game. But something's telling me deep down that Steve Adazio, DJ Durkin, these coaches they have, that Texas A&M team is going to play their best game. They have a new quarterback. Haynes King's not the guy pulling the trigger. You know, it's one of those things where Jimbo Fisher has quite the problem on his hands because if they lose, his whole program is in shambles, right? Mm-hmm. But it least it validates his choice to start Haynes King. If they win and Max Johnson pulls this win out, that means he fucked up the quarterback decision going into game one. And so he's in a kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. So I think Miami definitely has the potential. I really, really like Tyler Van Dyke. I love his mindset. I love just hearing him talk about his own performance. I can tell he's a tough guy that has a very high expectation level for himself. So yes, they can win the ACC. I think it's wide open. Florida State looks better. NC State is strong. Clemson is maybe a little bit better than I give them credit for, but they certainly aren't a shoe-in to run the conference. So yes, Miami could win the ACC.
It's super interesting, Zach, because after Max was named the starter, the line moved to 6.5 points. Texas A&M is a 6.5 point favorite now that they have a competent quarterback. Max Johnson, say what you will, he can certainly throw the ball, something that I don't think Haynes King can do. Additionally, they have a weapon out there, a guy that reminds me of J-Mo, and I know you're going to be mad at me for saying that, and Evan Stewart, who is a 10-4 guy, wiry, really tough from Texas high school football, that's a true freshman that kind of has been waiting to be unleashed because how can you be unleashed with Haynes King? So now that they have a thrower, I'm going to do think it will be an interesting game. That is my thoughts on that. Our guy, Professor Chaos, thank you for the five. Well, they had to buy Letterman Rowe to try to be relevant, but Austin and Berm left. Now Tim May is their only real draw. Talking about some podcast stuff with Rate on Cover 3 a little bit earlier. this is a good question from our guy, Josh. Thank you for the two. We appreciate you. Do we really know how good Ohio State is after the Notre Dame loss?
You never know. You don't know how good any of these – App State may be this year's Cincinnati. They may be a great football team. I mean, and be able to compete with anyone. So how bad is Texas A&M? You never really know until you watch teams 6 weeks in. That's why I'm talking about the handicapping model that we were building. It's irrelevant until you get the data set, right? How bad is Notre Dame? We still don't know, but they certainly are worse than we thought, right? So we don't know how good Ohio State is right now until they play they got to play the next 4 weeks out and play someone that's worth a shit. Cause Notre Dame clearly is not a top 15 team, let alone a top five team.
No, you're right.
We might not know how good Ohio State is till they play Michigan,
which is scary.
Now as an analyst now, I guess is what you would call me. As I watch it, I watch certain matchups to try to evaluate it, right? Like when Ohio State plays Maryland, we'll learn a lot about the pass defense, right? When they play Michigan State, we're going to learn a lot about the run defense. When they play Wisconsin, we're going to learn about, you know, Ohio State's ability to run the football. So every team presents something different. And when you piece that all together, you can have a decent idea of how good this football team is before they play Michigan. But ultimately, there is another aspect here. And that is that we also need to see how they play against a competent, equal opponent. Because I don't see one on the schedule until Michigan.
Boom. There you have it. Justin, thank you for the one. We appreciate you. No question with that one. We're talking about quarterbacks. Easy Eye. Thank you for the two. Every QB nowadays just tries to throw like a shortstop in baseball. Facts.
They do. They do. They just try to wing it. Like they're trying to turn two.
It's like the value of flicking the ball has kind of been highly, highly elevated. Jake, thank you for the 10. Is Toledo the second best team in Ohio? If not, how close are they? Also, I was a friend and told a friend. I know he's listening. So shout out to my guy, Chris Keith. Shout out to you, Chris. Man. Being a friend, telling a friend.
Absolutely. Welcome to the Army, Chris. That is everyone's objective. I'm not going to steal Pat McAfee's words anymore, but he says, "If be a friend, tell a friend." I need Army recruiters. Go recruit to this Army. It's a directive from the Commander-in-Chief. Go find us some more soldiers for the Menace Army. I need it. Find somebody and tell them, tune in. I'm telling you, it's a great show. That's all you got to tell them. Send them the link. Say, watch the show, and I promise you'll like it. Now, to your question, no, Cincinnati is far and ahead of Toledo. I think Toledo is definitely that third best team in the state of Ohio, but Cincinnati is far closer to Ohio State than they are down to Toledo. So I would put Toledo at 3.
Ooh, I love this question because it lets me talk about someone who I quite frankly love. Last time Ohio State had a pick 6. Thank you, T. Spiv, for the 5. I know the answer to this.
I don't.
Craig Young last year.
Oh, I knew it was going to be somebody funky.
You know how I feel about Craig Young, dog.
Hey, you know what, Chris? Remind me after the show. I want to go watch him and see how he's doing at Kansas.
Me too, man. That's I fucking love Craig Young, dog. Like that'll be the one that I forever am upset with. The Block O, thank you for the $6.14. That's a great dollar.
614 in the building.
Yep, 614. Do you think our corners are aggressive enough for this defense? To me, Burke is more of a finesse corner and doesn't like contact. Thoughts? OH, hashtag Menace2Sports.
Absolutely. Denzel's kind of a lighter, younger corner, right? And a lot of times they're not physical college football players yet. But when you see guys like Denzel Ward and Cameron Brown that play extremely physical, they like contact, they want to play cover two every now and then and be in the run support, like that's kind of rare, right? Deion Sanders wasn't hitting anybody, right? And you look at even like Jeff Okuda wasn't really hitting anybody.
Yeah. Denzel Ward is kind of your rare case. Like Denzel Ward likes to hit.
Right. And Kerryon Conley wasn't a big hitter. I mean, so now to the point, that was also a very different scheme. In this scheme, though, they still play a lot of man coverage. Mm-hmm. Like, whatever way you want to cut it, they do play zone. They do play some cloud. They do some stuff where the corners have to play physical. And I don't think that's Denzel's strength, but they play a ton of man coverage. Yeah. And that is, well, on it was supposed to be a strength, at least.
And we have to remember, Zach, something that I think people forget is this is his first time being a full-time corner. Last year was. Because before that, he played safety, wide receiver, and then some corner because he was recruited as an athlete. So yeah, there was kind of some confusion whether he would be a safety, what he would be. And so he's now kind of learning the ropes of it. And as a guy that played receiver, that's okay. Like that's kind of where you get the finesse guys, quote-unquote, if that makes sense. Not to kind of shit on your position group or whatever. Derek, thank you for the 2. Do you think current players watch the show? Well, I mean, I know
players watch the show. Yes. I'm not going to call them out, but yes. I mean, I have players that DM me about something I say. I mean, I have players' families that listen to the show. I mean, that's why, you know, I'm authentic because I'll say something about somebody's kid and it's like, well, it's the truth. I mean, I'm not going to disrespect them, but this is an honest analysis of your child, right? I think that's what any parent wants anyways. And if I'm a kid and I listen and, you know, I may say, I don't know if Julian Fleming's good enough and he may listen. And you know what? I don't. Go show me, Julian. Like, go show me you're good enough.
I think we've talked about it before. Remember when JSN's brother DM'd because Zach said he's going to run like a 4.5 or a 4.6.
No, I said he was going to run 4.6, 4.7 at the combine. And he messaged me. He was like, bro, I need a bet. I need a bet that he's 4.5 or better.
And that's a pro. Oh, Chris Drew Sizzling take of the week. This one's an interesting one, Zach, because for me personally, like looking at this game, the most important thing for me is if Cameron Babb plays, I believe he catches a touchdown this week. I think that becomes a point of emphasis. If he's on the field and if he's in the red zone, that they will get him the ball and score. I don't know how much of a hot take that is or if that's just a wish for me, but that's what I have. Additionally, I think that Trayvon Henderson goes over 100 yards this week. I think we finally get him the ball in space. Nothing too hot because it's Toledo, but that's what I got for this week. If you have one that you want to throw out there, toss it out there.
No, I love that.
Shout out to my guy Q. He
well, Hold on. King Bronco in the building. No, they was throwing like they was playing wombats at taped on wands, but never not got like any. Rather been like beaver mans that stooded on roofs, but only for the pantry shoes on. Classic stroke. King Bronco the legend. Thank you for your wise words. We are all dumber having listened to you and your super chat. Actually, not even super chat. It's just a dumbass chat.
I'm going to stand on business right here. I have Fresno State beating USC this week and USC still making the playoff. That's my hot take of the week. It just wasn't hot enough.
Christ. All credibility for the show is fucking gone.
I needed that reaction from you. Like when I don't get it.
Just so everyone knows, I bring Chris on to help ask questions and have dumbass takes. Do not hold his takes against this platform, this show, or me. That is our disclaimer. Chris's takes are fucking stupid, and that's part of the show. That's when Chris talks, it's for entertainment. When I talk, it's to help you learn something, hopefully.
That's the reaction I need out of you whenever I do a hot take. Like I was feeling too tame with the take I just gave, so I had to spin the
block. My hot take is Ohio State is going to beat the Rockets.
I don't sound like a tooth fairy. our guy Tyler, thank you for the $2. Loving the channel, man. OHIL, big dog. We appreciate you stopping by. Jesus.
We got to get King Bronco in the chat with Coach JB. He will go ballistic.
I'm saying he's a ghost, bro. Like we can't find him anywhere. I tried. I can't find him. If we have King Bronco and JB and they meet, JB will go off on him. Cody, thank you for the two. One of the Menace Generals.
The number one degenerate in the Menace General group chat.
Put respect on my name. Ha. B.O.B. makes my head hurt.
Bill O'Brien. Him and the rest of Bama fans are huge Bill O'Brien fans, by the way.
I love my Miami money line play. I don't know what it is. Did I miss what it was?
No, he's just saying he likes Miami on the money line. Bet.
Okay. Got it.
I do too. That's my bet.
That is fair. Let me find a couple more of these super chats. Thank you, Paul Moss, for the five. Good show, Zach and Chris. Why have our Ohio kids dropped in the national recruiting spotlight? Not a lot of highly recruited kids as before. You know, it's tricky.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's tricky because a lot of the Ohio kids don't do too many camps. And then there's just such an emphasis on like Southern football. And so when you see guys that are not committed from the South, they will immediately get a bump because that helps recruiting service like ratings. And that's kind of the end goal. You'll see. That's why you see Ohio kids be late risers more times.
Well, the other side of this is, Chris, that and I think what we're talking about is those name players, right? Like where are the receivers? And I think the reality is the talent pool in the state of Ohio when it comes to skill kids is down. And it's down bad from where it used to be 20 years ago. And there's a lot of reasons with job markets in certain cities in Ohio. And I think it's tough. It also comes back to the youth sports and high school sports in the inner city, because we can be politically correct or we can call it what it is, right? Most of the big time skill kids are black kids, right? Mm-hmm. There's a higher population of black kids in the city. The city league's fucking awful. I have $65,000 sitting in a charity bank account that I can't spend because the city of Columbus is a pile of shit. I want to start a youth league. I want to do something. But these motherfuckers in the city of Columbus don't return phone calls. They have fields sitting empty because they won't allow a youth sports league. They don't have middle school football. That's the reason these kids play basketball or do some other shit. They don't play football. It's not all just the talent. You got to get the talent on the field. Right. It goes academics and youth sports. That's the problem in at least in Columbus. Right. Like what if you can find me a Columbus sports youth league? There isn't one. There's all these offshoot leagues that are awful. There should be a great Columbus youth league. And that's what I want to create. So if you have a contact in the city of Columbus that can help me get that done, tell them to email me. Zach@Menace2Sports, because I've been trying for almost a year now, and these motherfuckers are so incompetent and lazy, it's a joke. The whole government in the city of Columbus should be fired, from this douchebag mayor all the way down to the fucking fields person.
Facts. Yep. Zach, we have no more super chats. Great fucking show.
Love it, man. TGIF, everybody. Go to patreon.com/menace to sports and sign up. No sales needed. If you want to join the most degenerate chat, like it's a group chat, the most degenerate group chat you've ever been a part of, go to become a general in the Menace Army. I'm just telling you, go to Patreon, become a general, try it out for a month. You will walk out of there like, man, this is the best group chat I've ever been in.
One more. Brian, why shouldn't Michigan be the favorite in the Big? I can't find a reason besides maybe the wide receivers at Ohio State are better.
Well, the only reason why is because CJ Stroud right now is a better quarterback than JJ McCarthy, mm-hmm. right? That's the only real reason. I mean, running backs, both really strong. Offensive line, both really strong. Defense, both look solid. Receiving core, I might give the edge to Ohio State if these kids play like I think they're capable of. So, to me, it's 1A, 1B right now. I don't have a favorite. Mm-hmm. I think I would give Ohio State the nod because of CJ's experience and the slightly better receiving core. Yeah. That's the only reason I give Ohio State the edge. But when we come down to that game is going to be two equally matched teams. And then you got to give the edge to the fact that Ohio State has a bitter taste in their mouth. The game's at home. Like there's a number of reasons why I think Ohio State will win that game as long as they develop over the next 10 weeks.
I missed this one, my bad. Where do you rank the 2012 Ohio State team, or how would they have fared against Alabama and that team?
I've said it before, that's the worst undefeated team in the history of college football, and not the players. We had good players, but we weren't a great football team yet. I mean, Braxton Miller bailed us out of everything on offense, at least. Our defense was good. The good news is we wouldn't have had to play the Alabama team. We would have got beat by the Alabama team, but we would have played Notre Dame and we would have won a national championship. That's who we would have played, because if you remember, Bama had a loss. There was two undefeated teams, Notre Dame and us. And then Bama got in because we had a bowl ban and beat the brakes off of Notre Dame. We would have beat Notre Dame and won a national championship, but we would not have been able to beat Alabama had we played them in some alternate universe.
Yeah, I firmly believe that. All right, Zach, get us out of here, man.
I appreciate everybody. Enjoy your weekend. We will be here after the Toledo game for a live reaction show. The call-in show will be back on Sunday. Looking forward to spending the weekend with you, Menace Army. Be a recruiter now, motherfucker. Go find us another Army soldier. Go get somebody. Everybody in this chat, everyone that watches this show, go find someone to join Menace Army. And if you haven't subscribed to the channel yet, stop watching the fucking videos. Subscribe, like, comment. Menace out.
Menace out.